From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project. The Media Project, I say, is underway. An opportunity for a half hour of commentary and analysis and perhaps even some insight into the issues affecting the news media this week. I'm Rex Smith, the editor of the Times Union, right here with Dr. Alan Chartuck, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Well, it's so great to be here with you, Rex. Under your leadership, this program has reached new heights.
Oh, dear.
And here,
is that a shot?
No, it was a shot.
Well, but it was a shot.
Compliment.
A shot against him, and I did the show last week when he wasn't here.
No, you're right. It was a shot against you.
It was lovely. I heard a bit of it.
It was a shot
Ira
against
Fussfeld,
you.
Ira Fussfeld, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and its affiliated publications. Sir?
Nice to see you back.
Well, thank you very much. And, of course, Kaylin Brown is here from the College of St. Rose, the head of the journalism program there. What do you know?
I know that we graduate very soon.
Wow.
Wow.
Yes.
So you're going to be saying goodbye and launching off into the world, some of those bright students, huh?
We are, some of whom have won journalism awards.
How right, cool and all
that?
The students I talk to, I ask, do you know Kaylin? They always say, yeah, she's wonderful.
Dr. Brown, they say, Professor Brown.
Oh, yeah. Not a lot of do you do that?
My students call me Kaylin.
Oh, that's
that's interesting. Is that the way it's done now in college?
Yes.
Not by everyone, but I don't feel comfortable actually having a title.
People call me Dr. Chartuck. I go look around me and say, where?
Yeah, where's mom, right?
Yeah, where's mom?
Absolutely. So anyway, I have to admit to this. So last week I missed the taping, and here I'm going to get
We missed you, Rex.
I'm going to get a whole load from Dr. Chartuck about this, that is from Alan. Because one of the places where I was, actually during the taping of this show, I was in Houston for a meeting of editors of the Hearst Empire. But I went from there to Washington, D.C. to attend the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
No kidding.
So I was there, and we're going to talk about that on this show. I don't approve of that, he says. I've never been to that event before. I've been to the Gridiron Dinner, which is
New York.
White tie. No, Gridiron is Washington also, it's more selective and... I was there once during the Reagan and twice during the George W. Bush administrations. Been to the Inner Circle in New York and, of course, the Legislative Correspondents event here in Albany. But our Washington correspondent invited me to come, and I thought, well, you know, this is because of last year's controversy. I thought this show is probably not long for this world. I will see it. And sure enough, now there's a lot of talk that WHCD may not exist anymore. So... quite the controversy about that comedian.
Is Michelle Wolf funny? That's my question. I saw the clips. Was she funny?
She was more funny in person. That is, the audience was getting a kick out of it. There were some groans, of course, but there was a lot of laughter. It wasn't until the next day when there was a lot of the pushback. And I was sitting next to a Republican congressional staffer from Texas who was getting a lot of kicks out of it herself, too. It's not as though it was an entirely partisan thing.
And one other thing I may say, she didn't say anything that wasn't true.
Aha.
So therefore, they knew what they were going to get when they had her on. I think she was terrific. She did the exact right thing. She said, I'm not apologizing. That's what she said. I'm not apologizing. I think once you apologize, it means you've done something wrong. And she didn't do anything wrong.
Well, I agree that she was very, very funny. I've watched, it says something about my life. I typically watch this thing on C-SPAN each year.
On TV?
Yes, and there have been some of the comics who just fall flat. I thought this routine was terrific. That said, we've talked about this on this program a number of times. These dinners, I don't care for them. I don't think they send a good message to the public, particularly in this era of distrust of journalists, that once a year, everybody gets dressed up in Washington and sits around and pats each other on the back and makes fun of each other. And it just sells the notion that everybody is in bed with each other.
That's
together.
Right, Ira. It's all phony. Here's what I think. What happens is that this guy, Trump, is capable of bringing down the Republic. I mean, if he had his way, I believe there's ample evidence that he would do that. It reminds me a lot of the hockey game. You know, they beat each other over the head with sticks, but when they walk off the field, they're putting their arms around each other. So it looks like, you know, the whole thing is a setup. Look, this is dangerous stuff that Trump is doing. And by normalizing it with this kind of behavior, you mess up. That's my opinion.
But this predates Trump. The whole issue of the dinner and is it appropriate for politicians and journalists to be patting each other on the back and making it look like it's all an insider's game.
Well, in some cases, Ira, it's even worse than that. I believe in the Albany thing for a long time, it was the reporters who were putting on the show who were selling the tickets to the people they were covering. Now, they changed that so that they said, okay, now we're going to do it so everything or a lot of it goes to charity. But that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're covering somebody and you ask them for money on any level. I just think it's plain wrong. I can see from your eyes, Caitlin, that you are not happy with me. Why not?
Oh, Alan, I'm concerned about the money part. So this event, from what I read, costs about $500,000 to undertake, and about $134,000 of that money goes for scholarships. I absolutely agree that journalism scholarships are a necessary part of educating journalists. It's a beautiful thing that we have scholarships. It seems that money could be used by any local newspaper to help deploy more reporters to do journalism.
Well, they'll argue that in addition to the scholarships, money goes to programs that they have all year round and awards that they present. But
they still, Ira, I'm taking great exception to the tone of your voice and what you're saying. They still have to go up to some politician and say, and how many tickets will you take this year? You know, that's wrong, even if it's for a good cause, right?
I agree with you 100%.
There's a conflict of interest. Not that many people attend, right?
Well, Rick? And that's probably why it's going to die. I suspect this may be the last year for the Legislative Correspondents Show in Albany, which is the oldest of these shows around the country. I mean, this is done in almost every state, really, where there's a significant press corps. In fact, there used to be so many reporters in the city of Troy alone that Troy had the Troy Newsmen's Dinner with legends like John Scanlon and Bob Fusco, singers who could perform. It was really quite the thing back in the 40s and 50s. And consider the era in which this all began was when Teddy Roosevelt was the governor of New York and that era. And in those days, reporters and politicians were kind of in collusion. They were very different socioeconomic strata, but they kind
That's
of understood
true.
Each other. And the reporters just sort of took whatever the politicians gave them. And, you know, Teddy Roosevelt was really a pal of journalists and was himself a journalist. So that was a different era. And these dinners over time, as we have become more combative, as the press has become more independent, as it's been much more of a contest between government secrecy and the reporters trying to dig things out, that contest has been, you're right, Alan, it's kind of like you're on the field and then suddenly you come together. And that has been kind of a nice respite. Sometimes you would think this is nice to be able to say we're all in this for the good of the country or for the good of the state of New York or the citizens. But it's a bit hollow.
But, you know, for all of these academic and well-reasoned arguments against this dinner that we're generally making, the reason it creates controversy every year, particularly this year, was because of the comedian.
And because Trump wouldn't go.
Trump wouldn't go. And that's part of the comedian issue, because, as you know, in the past, when presidents would come up, particularly in recent years with Obama and even George W. Bush, they would do their own skewering, their own roasting. And that part of the program was missing because Trump did not show up. And then on top of that, Michelle Wolf was excellent and she was sharp. But you know what? She did exactly what she's paid to do. And then when she did it, everybody said, that's outrageous. I mean, she joked about it herself. She told a joke, and you could see the audience was uncomfortable. And she said, you didn't vet me very well, did you? And this is what I do. And which makes the fact that the association president, Margaret Talov, sort of do a semi-apology for the appearance of Wolf, that she doesn't come out looking good on that. She should have said, this is a First Amendment dinner. We hired a comic. It's supposed to be a roast, at least that part of the program. She roasted. Live with it.
Well, I have one other thing I'd like to say about this. First of all, Rex, point A is that I don't think the New York Times goes, no. do they?
That's right. They about 3 years ago, they decided they would not participate
for
anymore.
For good reason, and because they have some ethics, and some, I said. And I think for a while, you weren't going either, right, Rex? I think for a little while, you at the Times Union weren't buying tables.
Well, we don't buy tables anymore because consider this.
Anymore,
it's expensive.
It's expensive. Yeah. You know, that's the other reason why this thing is not going to work. The Legislative Correspondents' Dinner in Albany used to be a black tie event on a Saturday night, and people would buy a whole table, 10 seats in those days for like $150 each. And now the seats are $325. It's a Tuesday evening event. It's not black tie. And the fact is it was moved to Tuesday because nobody would stay in town for Saturday night. Also, by the way, Shelley Silver was not around because it was the Sabbath. And so if the powerful people whom you were skewering were not showing up, and then came the revolution, the digital revolution, which deprived traditional media of a lot of their revenues. You don't have the money to spend. If I had an extra couple $1,000 that I might spend on a table, I'd put that into bonuses for reporters for doing great work. So we can't afford it anymore. So this year I have bought two tickets to the Legislative Correspondents' Dinner in Albany, which is all we can really afford. And I suspect that that show may not survive another year. It's 118 years old.
And that show, I suppose they would say the charm of the show is another reason why there shouldn't be a show, and this is the skit where they dress up. And I've never seen that show. I have seen clips of the New York City version.
Yeah.
And they dress up and they skewer the politicians. But then usually the mayor of New York City, and I don't know who, the governor, would come out on stage also dressing up and being a part of the skit. And again, it's just they're all wallowing in the same.
The response used to be, when Hillary Clinton was running for the U.S. Senate, and the rap on her was, well, she's not from here. She came out to do her response, and she was carrying with her a great big carpet bag. It was great, you know, and she plopped it on the podium and made jokes at her own expense and poked a little fun at reporters, too, particular reporters.
Well, that's a very good point, Rex. There isn't enough of that. They don't make fun, you know, it seems like bullying. They get on the politicians, but they don't get on themselves. There was a certain amount of animosity towards me when I was doing my show with Mario Cuomo for all of those years. And there was always an Allen joke in there, which I always felt was, well, you don't let us in the room, so therefore, you know, it's your thing.
Allen, it's because
but
you're famous.
But no, I haven't finished yet. I just haven't finished yet. There was one joke that I found particularly offensive, which was that Mario stopped short and Alan's nose got brown.
Oh.
Now, you know, now they're taking out their personal animus on people who are doing a better job than they are.
Yeah. So there's a value, I believe, at this event. Rex, maybe you can help me with this. Is that the event where that evening one member of the State House Press Corps receives the Legislative Correspondents Association Award?
That's true. Actually, now they give out two awards, one that is judged by independent judges from outside and one that is judged by the Press Corps alumni. Yes.
So which one is the Walter T. Brown Award my grandfather?
Is that right?
Yes.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one judged by the alumni. That's
okay.
been around
yeah.
for years and
yeah.
years. Uh-huh.
Yep. So he was the AP Bureau Chief in Albany. He used to cover Franklin Roosevelt. Huh. He was on the trains all around the country when he was running for president. But that award was named for him, and it's up there in
yeah.
the LCA.
Well,
it's on the wall.
There's a plaque on the wall in the Capitol.
Did
Walter
you know
T.
him?
He was very young when he was out with a bunch of journalists. He was, I think, early 60s when he died of a heart attack.
Wow.
So I have pictures with him,
yeah.
but I was young.
He must have fascinating stories.
He has amazing yeah. clips, but
yeah.
they're disintegrating.
So. Yeah.
He covered the Valentine's Day Massacre, too,
wow.
many moons
mm-hmm.
ago. So.
Wow.
Anyway.
Isn't that great? You see, it was such an interesting era. Actually, when you step into the LCA rooms in the Capitol, and for people who don't know the Albany State Capitol, there's the Senate chamber on one side and the Assembly chamber on the other. In between are these unremodeled old time big old room where lots and lots of desks sit for reporters, and there are a couple little cubbyhole offices for the Times Union in the hallway.
And there are pictures, including one of my grandfather. I go back to this only because there's a picture of a card game, because they used to play a lot of late night cards
yeah.
there. And there was a card game that resulted in some fabulous ending, which I don't know. But there's a picture of the hand that was played that
night. Well, that's right. They actually, when somebody would get a royal flush, they would actually take the cards and frame it, saying, "This is, we certify this guy had a royal flush in the poker game."
Okay. Yes,
that great old relic. So that's kind of the era that these dinners belong in. And we've gotten to a point, we've evolved to a point where the legacy media, A, don't get to play that kind of a role in taking the information, and B, where politics is so much more scientific and where there just isn't the kind of goodwill that there used to be.
Well, you know, I have to say this to you, Rex, and you know that I hate to disagree with you, but there was also a sense that there was, you know, that people got paid off. Politicians sometimes paid off one way or the other. So Rockefeller, I am told, I can't swear to this, put the spouses of reporters on his payroll. Of course, we all know what that's all about. We see that to this day, but not the way that it used to be. So I think in the old days, when you talk about the good old days, they weren't so good old because these people were pretty well controlled in many ways.
Payoffs these days go in the form of access, you know.
I was just going to say, the payoff for you want to be a big-time reporter, work for Fox News, and you can get to interview the president, and then you get some higher ratings as a result.
Absolutely. And you look at the Washington correspondence. What differentiates the White House correspondence dinner from the others is that it's so heavily populated with TV people. And that's why the celebrities all came. And, you know, these TV correspondents become famous in their own right, and they're paid a lot more than politicians. And it's just it's an awkward dynamic that is different from reporting gigs elsewhere in the country. And that's why this one dinner in particular is different. And each person envies the other. The politicians envy the journalists' access to people's homes, and the journalists envy the politicians' power, and they kind of eye each other warily. You know, it's a funny thing. You walk into the White House Correspondents' Dinner last Saturday as I was doing this. You walk into the ground floor of the Washington Hilton, which is where Ronald Reagan was shot. You're walking into that door on that lower entryway, and as my wife and I were walking up the walk, I heard somebody in front of me looking back over my shoulder saying, "This way, Senator, this way." And I walked toward the same door, and I was diverted immediately away from the red carpet.
Well, I was going to ask you, you weren't asked to pose for pictures? And
no, you can do it yourself. As you were leaving, you could get your picture taken in front of the step and repeat on the red carpet.
But you look like a distinguished senator.
Well, thank you, but it wasn't me they were looking for. They recognized.
Well, you raised the point of celebrities. During the Obama years, the liberal Hollywood types wanted to be touching the hem of his garment, and the Hollywood crowd really showed up for those events every year, and it was a badge of honor if various media organizations had a table, and at their table was, I don't know, George Clooney or somebody.
Yeah.
Now, that hasn't happened in the last couple of years, A, because Trump doesn't hold that appeal to that crowd, and B, because Trump doesn't show up. So,
True.
But that's another reason why that event has gotten way out of control. The red carpet, people being interviewed by Entertainment Tonight.
Here's what's funny. There were 2,500 people at Correspondents' Dinner. We were not in the back tier of tables, but we were pretty far back. And then the tier just in front of us, this shows you how power comes and goes in Washington. Right off to our left was Sean Spicer, whereas his successor, his deputy, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, was at the head table representing the administration. And in front of us was the comedian whose career tanked when she held up the severed head.
Oh, yes, Kathy Griffin.
Kathy Griffin was sitting there. She's apparently
She's coming back into favor.
You know.
And she said she should never have apologized for the bloody head of Trump incident.
Well.
Fake head.
thought I'd mention it.
And just one more thing before we leave this. The New York City event is really quite different from all the others because there's so many TV reporters in New York City who really aspired to be Broadway actors. You know, a lot of people, if they can't make it on the stage, become TV correspondents. Sorry, folks. It's true. So they can sing and dance and do all this stuff. And then they've got all the Broadway casts who will support the mayor. And when Michael Bloomberg was the mayor, he could afford to hire these people to come, and they write his response and they bring out the show. So it's a great showbiz thing, the inner circle in Washington.
Yeah, but call me old-fashioned, and politics aside, does the mayor of New York City, and I'm talking about Giuliani, do himself any favors when he dresses up in drag And I mean, which is what he would do at these things. It's just not my view of a politician.
Well, you shouldn't denigrate a man's impulses. You know,
I guess it's was it not that there's anything wrong with that? Is that what you're supposed to say?
You're old-fashioned.
Yeah, I guess. I'm old.
Remember when he said,
the media
back
project.
The tape, he said, call me old-fashioned.
Oh, okay.
Hello, old-fashioned.
No, I said, I would like to have an old-fashioned.
Call me a scotch and soda. Okay, Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, Caleb Brown, and Rex Smith are here. If you want to share your thoughts, it's media@wamc.org. Here's an interesting story pointing out that there are baby Breitbarts popping up across the country. Apparently, you know, Breitbart being this wacko right-wing site. That's to put it mildly. I mean, Breitbart, of course, doesn't have respect for facts. And now, here are these things that sound like real journalism that are popping up state by state, notably the Tennessee Star, for example, which sounds like a real newspaper. You know, it is really hard to distinguish real journalism from that kind of stuff.
Well, that's what the internet has helped do. It makes everybody a journalist, and it confuses people who don't know how to separate the Tennessee Star from the Tennessean, which is the quote-unquote legitimate newspaper in that market. And I don't know what the answer is, because the internet is certainly has more positives than negatives, but the negatives are pretty severe, I think.
I would assert, Ira, that perhaps education is the answer.
I would agree with that.
And that the masses need to be educated on what constitutes actual news from something other than and something pretending to be something.
That's the self-serving button.
That's the self-serving button going off.
Yeah, but she's right.
Yes,
yeah,
I am pro-education. Right. That is a true fact. I'm a teacher and I'm pro-education.
Don't blame it on yourselves for doing a poor job of talking to the kids or to the nation or getting people to really pay attention. No, you should blame, you know.
Let's just say ourselves, Alan, instead of yourselves. Let's not say that WAMC has really reached out to the Trump supporters in our community.
But there's value in people being taught what distinguishes actual news from something other, and there are ways to determine
that. How are you
going to
do it? I'm sick and tired of hearing you and Rex go on about this stuff. Tell me how to do it.
So take a look at a story like the one that was published in the New York Times about a college student who graduated a year ago and created an entire fake news story around the election. So I guess it would have been 2016.
Yeah, but how does that change?
I would tell you where I would start. It would be long before they're in Kalen's class. I would make sure that civics went back into the high school curriculum.
Yeah, and as soon as you do, somebody will stand up at the Board of Education meeting and say they're teaching. My wife was teaching the Holocaust for the first time at her high school when she was teaching, and she got hell. She got hell because people said that's inappropriate to be talking about that. And I have a feeling, you know, you start that education stuff, people will be good. Yelling liberals.
Well, that's too bad. Stand up for truth. And also the other good thing that's happening is that Facebook is now beginning to rate the trustworthiness of news sites. And they are doing it through a formula and through human eyeballing. And this will help because they will actually have a rating on the news that is presented. This is one of the key changes that Facebook is making to try to combat the fake news that affected the U.S. election.
Except if in this climate, are people going to say, who is it for Facebook to be the determinant?
That's right. You know, you're right, but at least it's a step. In the combination of these steps and with teaching young people the value of looking. Actually, it is teaching them the kind of assessment and thinking and critical thinking that you look for as part of education. That's really what you have to do if you're teaching news literacy. You're teaching young people how to look at data or look at an accumulation of facts and determine whether it's true or not.
I hate to say this, but I agree with you.
But I also agree with Ira that accentuating civics at the high school level is important. I also think that in the middle school and perhaps elementary school level, that there's value in teaching children, do not write something down that you do not expect to be paid attention to.
Before we hand a student a copy of The Great Gatsby and tell them, read the book and give us a book report, the first book I give them is The Constitution. And read The Constitution. Hopefully it will stay with you.
Well, that's interesting because when I taught American government politics, that's all I did. I took out the Constitution, said we're going to go through it from beginning to end. We'll talk about the Congress. We'll talk about the executive. We'll talk about the Supreme Court.
Too bad you didn't have young Donald Trump in your class. All right. That's enough for today. The Media Project.
Boy.
Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, Caleb Brown, and Rex Smith. With gratitude to our publisher, our producer, David Gustina, and to you for listening on The Media Project.
together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such a...
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Kaylin Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.